Okay, let me first thank very much Abhayesh Eckert for inviting me to this meeting and giving me the opportunity to present you some work which we did. First of all, I would like to tell you that I don't come from loop quantum gravity or loop quantum cosmology. I'm interested in early universe cosmology for many years. Many colleagues of mine who have been using models, cosmological models based or inspired upon string theory ideas. And only a few years ago, this is thanks to some discussions with Martin, I got interested in loop quantum cosmology. So first of all, I apologize if I say things which are very familiar and invented for many of you, or if I miss some of the references. But I will give you my point of view on that. So I will give you the motivation of somebody coming from cosmology to work on that issue. Then in order to just set the stage, I will give a short introduction to write the Hamiltonian constraint. I will tell you what the lattice refinement is, and then I will describe some work which William Nelson and myself did, and William is going to speak afterwards. He's finishing his PhD thesis in the UK this year. So I will try to convince you that indeed a lattice refinement can be helpful so that we have a more natural inflationary model. Then we'll see what are the constraints on the matter Hamiltonian which can be given from a given lattice refinement model. Not any matter can be supported. Then I will argue that if we would like to have a unique factor ordering at the continuum limit when the Wheeler-DeWitt equation is the correct description, then there is only one type of lattice refinement which can do that. Then I will give you a numerical recipe which can solve the quantum constraint equation for any type of lattice refinement you would like to choose. And I will use that in order to confirm some earlier work by Martin and collaborators on stability of the Schwarzschild interior. And then I will go to the conclusions. So let us say the motivation. I'm interested in cosmological predictions of quantum gravity. So you know, inflation is a very successful kind of model in order to give some answers on the shortcomings of the standard hot Big Bang idea. And in addition, as a bonus, it gives us the origin of initial fluctuations, giving structure formation and the CMB anisotropies. Nevertheless, despite this enormous success of inflation, we should not forget that it has a number of problems. For example, the Eflaton has not been yet found in any particle physics measurements. Now, the parameters of any inflationary models, actually many inflationary models, are often very fine-tuned in order to meet the data. Despite the work of more of 25 years by many people on inflation, inflation is still a paradigm in search of a model. And least but not last, if inflation has to cure the initial conditions dependence of the standard hot Big Bang model, it has to prove itself generic, something which is not yet the answer. In addition, there are a number of questions which inflation does not address, like initial singularities or transplacian issues. Don't forget that any relevant kind of scale today, it started at the beginning of inflation as being transplacian kind, and therefore one should take this into account, which inflation, again, doesn't do it. So in order to deal with all these questions, that means that we should have some kind of theory of quantum gravity, which we expect that in one way is going to give us a kind of solution to the to cure the singularities of GR, and is going to give us the correct initial conditions, which either are going to confirm the conditions that inflation needs in order to start, or is going to give us something alternative. And the whole picture, cosmology can be quite important because it can give the stage for a quantum gravity theory, and in addition, it can give a kind of testing ground because at the end of the day, we want to see if it describes the universe which we observe. So, okay, I'm going to concentrate on loop quantum cosmology, which, as we all know, is a cosmological mini superspace-based model, which is based on a quantization given from the full loop quantum gravity theory, and therefore, as in loop quantum gravity, loop quantum cosmology is formulated in terms of SU2 holonomies of the connection and the triad. As Abbey said a couple of days ago, in the classical theory, the curvature can be obtained by the holonomies around the loop as the area that they close is shrunk. This you cannot do it in the quantum geometry because we have a minimum non-zero eigenvalue of the area operator, which is the area gap, and that's what it gives us the equations to be difference and non-differential equations. So here I'm going to study only isotropic models, and therefore I have only one kind of dynamical variable, the scale factor. In connection variables, it can be expressed in terms of the triad component, and which is conjugate to the connection component. For me, afterwards working in a flat universe, the k is going to be equal to zero. Gamma is, as you know, the Barbero-Mirchi parameter whose value is given from black hole entropy calculations. Now, in order to get rid of this fiducial volume dependence in the Poisson bracket, I'm going to use these new variables, which Martin gave them as well yesterday. So this actually determines the volume of the fiducial cell, and C determines the rate of change of the physical edge length, so that the Poisson bracket does not depend on the fiducial cell. So in the old quantization, following the procedure of the full loop quantum gravity, these are the two variables which we are going to promote in operators. So you can see that this is the action of the triad upon the basis states. And then in this kind of fault quantization where mu naught is a constant, then you can see that this operator is going to act as a simple shift operator. Now, then you can go and write down. Actually, I write these expressions because I will use them later, so I will refer to what I give here. The volume operator, which represents the volume of the elementary cell with these eigenvalues, it acts on the base states like that, and you can go and write the inverse operator by taking the irreducible, representation j equal to 1/2. This is the same kind of ambiguity which appears when we trace over SU2 holonomies in the case of the gravitational part of the Hamiltonian constraint. So clearly here one can see that once that this inverse volume is going to reach a maximum value at mu equal to mu naught and does not diverge as in the case of classical theory. Now, having that, one can go and write down the constraint in terms of the holonomies and the triad component. So here I give the Hamiltonian operator, and the holonomies are defined here, and this tau is given in terms of the Pauli matrix. This is standard notation that I think everybody used in previous discussions as well. So now, having that, one can go and write down what will be the Hamiltonian constraint operator on the base state, which is given here, with this definition R of mu, which I give with mu naught. Up to now, it is a constant. Now, having that, one can go and solve the Hamiltonian constraint. The difference here with respect to the full theory is that we have only one constraint. And the matter Hamiltonian, we just put it by hand. And like that, at the end of the day, we get the difference equation analogous to the Wheeler-DeWitt equation. So this is the questions which we will have, which, as you can see, it is given here in terms of this internal time mu. We do not have a continuous variable as in standard kind of cosmology. And I have expanded here the physical wave function. By physical, I mean that it's going to respect the Wheeler-DeWitt equation in terms of the basis states. And I have assumed that the matter Hamiltonian acts diagonally on the basis states. So here, this is the basic equation which we will have. And what is this issue of the lattice refinement? In the old quantization, this mu naught parameter was fixed. In other words, the holonomies, they had a fixed magnitude, and then what you get are instabilities in the continuum semi-classical limit. In other words, when you take the continuum limit, where Wheeler-DeWitt equation is going to work, you are going to have oscillations of your wave function, which go like A, the scale factor square root of the cosmological constant to the minus 1 power, which means that the universe expands, the A becomes bigger, so this period of oscillations is going to decrease, and you might arrive at some point that you will have that is going to become the scale smaller than the discreteness of scale of your difference equation. And therefore, you would expect to have some kind of this discreteness geometry to appear in the quantum, in the classical limit. In other words, what you will have is that, remember that the way that we wrote the equation has this discrete step for mu naught, and has been assumed that the wave function is not going to change a lot within this scale, which means that you can go and interpolate between the different values of your discrete wave function and write it in terms of a continuous wave function. This kind of preclassicality is going to not to be valid anymore, and therefore, in order to avoid this thing, that is was one of the reasons that latter refinement has been introduced. Now, of course, if now we allow the holonomies to vary, then we will have that the form of the equations is going to change. What is the exact type of this kind of lattice refinement has to be given from the full theory, and what I will do here is I'm going to argue that some kind of choice of lattice refinement can be supported from phenomenological reasons. So I'm going to start with this particular choice, and then in that way the basic operators are going to be given by replacing the constant mu naught by mu tilde, which immediately tells you that now this operator is not going to be anymore a shift operator, because mu tilde is not a constant but is a function of mu. Now, we can make a change of variables going from mu to nu in that way, and therefore we can see that in this new kind of variables, then we can have that the holonomies, they are going to act as a simple shift operators, so which means that in that case it's more appropriate to use this new basis than the previous one. This is the way that the volume is going to the volume operator is going to act on the base states, and then the self-adjoint gravitational constraint operator, it is given here with this definition. Now let us go then like that to expand the general state in terms of the base states. So this is the Hamiltonian constraint which we will get, and then if we take the continuum limit, in other words, when mu is much bigger than mu naught, then this will be the constraint equation which we will have, which is a kind of particular factor ordering of the Wheeler-DeWitt equation. So let us see the implications for inflation. So I'm going to classically, if we take a massive scalar field, this will be the Hamiltonian, where P phi is the momentum, V of phi is the potential. So in order to quantize that, this is the expression which I'm going to use, and therefore you can easily check that in the continuum limit, that will be the matter part of the Hamiltonian, and then if you go to your constraint equation, this is the large scale limit of the equation which you have to solve, which I have expressed that in terms of the p variable, which is related to mu like that, and beta is a constant which is given here. So this is the equation which we have to solve. So in order to solve it, we approximate the dynamics of our scalar field phi, which is going to play the role of the inflaton field like that. This is a constant. Here we have this kind of dependence, which if we want to see what's happening in the slow roll inflation, in other words, we want that the field rolls very slowly, so inflation is long enough in order to solve the problems of the Big Bang, then we want that the potential, it is constant, which means that in slow roll we want that this power delta becomes equal to 3/2. Then, if we make a separation of variables, we can get that in the large scale limit, this is the equation which we have to solve, and this is the solution which it has. Now we're going to see what are the constraints so that into that kind of solution, so that preclassicality can be maintained. In other words, if we want that the end of inflation can be, as everybody has done, in the framework of standard GR, then that implies that inflation should finish at a scale where still preclassicality can be a valid assumption, which implies that when you solve that equation I gave you before, And you write what will be the separation between two successive zeros of that function, then this one has to be bigger than 4 mu tilde, otherwise Petrasicali is not going to be valid. And therefore, if you play now with the definitions of the mu tilde as a function of mu, that was the lattice refinement model we took, you will get a constraint that you will have on this quantity, and this constraint can be translated into a constraint for the potential of the field phi. So now let us see what I will have if I take this value of delta, so I have slow roll, this type of mu naught, gamma the Barbero image parameter, and put h bar equal to 1. Then we can see what is the constraint which we want to impose on our inflaton field. If you play the same game in the case of not lattice refinement, you have constant mu naught, then we will find that the constraint that we get on the potential of the field, it depends on the number of phi folds. And if you want that at least half of the E folds are between the classical era, then this is the constraint that we will have. Now, this constraint now can be compared, can be as well, we can find the second constraint, which comes from the CMB temperature anisotropies. In other words, I'm going to just get a particular inflationary model. By the way, this is the simplest inflationary model, which it happens to be the one that is better as supported by the WMAP data. And then we know that the density of perturbations, the delta rho over rho in Fourier time, in Fourier space scale, at the time that the perturbation crosses the horizon, it's given from that expression in terms of the potential, and the Kobe fixed that to be 10 to the minus 5, which implies that I can, for my given model of inflation, have a constraint, which is given here, and if I'm going this constraint to combine it with the constraint that I found before, so preclassicality is valid, in other words, the inflation can be done classically, then we will find that there is a condition on the mass of the inflaton field, which in the case of a fixed lattices, this condition becomes very severe. In other words, if I would like to have a more natural inflation, so I'm not going to tune very much the initial mass of the inflaton field, then it seems to be that we need to have a kind of lattice refinement. What is this is the number of phi folds that we want to have. So now I'm saying if half of the inflation took place within, so, you know, the number of phi folds, we need them to be about 70. So if half of that took during the classical year. Excuse me? Certainly. Right. This is just, I mean, I'm not saying that these values has to be like the values. I'm just saying that what I find here is an acute dependence, which is much milder in the case that I have lattice refinement. That's the only message I want to give. I'm not saying that if I have lattice refinement will be always, no. I'm saying just as an order of magnitude, here I can have a simple model which goes towards the direction that lattice refinement soften the condition on the inflaton mass. That's all for a successful inflationary model. Not any stronger. This is just, but you see that the order of magnitude much, that's the only thing. So, no, from the data, what I have from the data, I have that. So having that for a given volume, for a given type of potential, I can constrain M. That's all.
I mean, from the data, you know that this mass is 10 to the minus 5
No, because look, there was, if you take, for example, chaotic inflation, then in order to fit that data, you need a coupling of the order of 10 to the minus, 15, 17. So you have the couplings, and the masses are the free parameters. You have to tune them to fit the data. Couplings are free here. Okay, let me continue then. I mean, that's up to the chairman, if I should continue or not. I mean, the chairman, the speaker. So anyway, let me then move to the second thing that we did, is a Lazarus Feynman and the Mather Hamiltonian. Again, this is the setting. This is the Lazarus Feynman model which we are using, and this is the change of variables. So this is the Wheeler-DeWitt equation which we have to solve. In other words, we have parameterized up to now by this parameter A the type of the Lazarus Feynman model. And now what we're saying is that if we take the large limit, then, and we want that preclassicality is going to be valid, then this is the question which we have to solve. So what we would like to do is to put some constraints on the type of solutions that we are going to accept, so that then we can play with the possible kind of parameter space that we have for this parameter A and the new parameter by which we are going to parameterize the Mather Hamiltonian. So in order to solve the constraint which I just gave you there, we should give the specific form of the Mather Hamiltonian. Now we're interested in the large scale limit, so we can make this approximation, which this means that this epsilon does not depend on mu. You can write the same thing, you can write a similar thing in terms of the mu basis if you wish. So then, in the large scale limit, the Mather Hamiltonian can be approximated in this way, which, strictly speaking, it is valid only for nu much bigger than 1, and therefore this is the question which we have to solve. Let us see the constraints, therefore, that we want to have for the acceptable solutions of this equation. The first one is we would like to accept only normalizable solutions, which means that if we define the finite norm of the physical wave functions like that, then it is conserved. In other words, it is independent of the phi equal to phi naught kind of choice, which means that by looking at that expression, one can with a little calculation realize that the solution of the constrained equation are going to be normalized only if they decay faster than nu to the minus 1 over 2 delta. And this is going to give us some kind of scale dependence on the type of the matter component which has been parameterized by this parameter delta. In addition, since the solutions of that equation were going in the large limit, express them in terms of the Bessel functions, we want that the large argument of the Bessel functions is going to be valid. And finally, we would like that preclassicality holds. By combining all that, we're going to have some constraints on our two-dimensional parameter space given by the way we parameterize our Lazarus Feynman model and the way we have parameterized our Mather Hamiltonian. So if you do that calculation and you consider only A between 0 and minus 1/2, given from considerations from that work by Martin and collaborators, then we can see that there are indeed quite severe a kind of constraints between the possible Mather Hamiltonian for a particular choice of the lattice refinement. So the message of that is that the continuum limit of the Hamiltonian constrained equation is going to be sensitive to the matter of the model, and only a limited range of matter components can be supported by a given choice of your lattice refinement. Now, the next thing which I would like to discuss is this unique factor ordering in the continuum limit of the loop quantum cosmology. Remember? Yes? When we solve it, you remember, I have apps here. The way that I parameterize the matter Hamiltonian depends on this parameter delta for large scales. So then I have my full equation which I want to solve. Sorry? The gravitational part is just the standard one. So this is the equation which we have to solve, where we put for the matter Hamiltonian exactly the relation the I have parameterized in terms of this parameter delta I gave you before. Delta is here. Delta is going to be in the matter part. Delta is in the matter part. It's the way that we parameterize the matter part of the Hamiltonian. Okay? The other is taken, I mean, everything else is taken care of from the A parameter, in other words, from the lattice refinement model, and the matter Hamiltonian is parameterized by delta. This is a particular type of the good equation. Remember, I take in the large limit. So what I get is indeed a particular factor ordering of the Willard-DeWitt equation. Okay. No, the matter part has delta. No, because it's the way that I parameterize the matter. I want to see what matter can be supported by a given lattice refinement model. In the continuum limit, exactly. So now, the other thing is that, is about the type of the lattice refinement model that one should take. So, remember when we wrote the Hamiltonian constraint in terms of the holonomies and the triad, there are many different possible ways that one could have written that out because all the holonomies in the classical level they commute. However, each of them is going to give in the continuum limit a different Willard-DeWitt equation. So what we did, William and I, we had just concentrated in the case of factor ordering of the form of cyclic permutators of the holonomy and the volume operators with a trace. And then we found for each of them what will be the kind of Willard-DeWitt equation that we can get. So, for example, here is the way... Here is exactly the same setting that we gave each time, the way that we have parameterized our lattice refinement and the way we make this change of state from the mu tilde to nu. So now, as an example, just consider this kind of factor ordering. We could have, there are six, seven of them. Six, I think, of them. So we took all of them just for an example. Let's just give you one of them. So you can see how it's going to act on the state nu. And one can expand that to see how it's going to act, this particular factor ordering, on a general state psi of the Hilbert space. And this is the equation which you get. And you are going to do the same kind of game for all that, for the other five types of factor ordering that you can write down. And then you go to make the expansion in the continuum limit. In other words, when we assume actually that the discreteness scale is going to be much smaller than the scale of the universe. And then we can found that the large scale continuum limit of the Hamiltonian constraint can be written like that. And you can do the same for any other kind of factor ordering. And you find that only for this particular value of A, in other words, when we have that the lattice refinement goes like mu to the minus 1/2, we found that for each of these kind of choices we made, we come at the end of the day with the same kind of limit on the large scale. In other words, when Willard-DeWitt equation is going to be the approximate limit. And if you want to write it in better variables, that's what we're going to get. In other words, all factor orderings, when we write the constraint operator, are going to come in this expression for the Willard-DeWitt equation only for the choice of lattice refinement to be minus 1/2. Yes, now I'm going back. Now I'm generalizing. Because remember I gave a reference from people who at first, they have been working the minus 1/2. So we took the same thing, minus 1/2. And there are some arguments. Abe has a nice simple argument why it should be minus 1/2. Then we said, okay, let us try to take a general and that let's see actually whether we can from some other means confirm this kind of thing. This is more general. Here we try, yeah, here is more general. And then we have different limits for each of them. So all the different choices of factor ordering are not going to converge on the same Wheeler-DeWitt once we take the last limit. Right, exactly. So in that sense, you come at what we write here. These results can be seen in two different ways. One can say that we can stick with phenomenological kind of arguments, which tell us that it has to be -1/2, and then the loop quantum of cosmology is going to predict a unique factor order of the Wheeler-DeWitt equation. Or you can go the other way and say, I want not to have ambiguities in the Wheeler-DeWitt equation, and then I'm going to fix that. Yes, look, if I'm not wrong, correct me if I may be wrong, I have the, let me go just one sec. No, excuse me, just one sec. There is not that paper where at least you and collaborators, you give this model -1/2.
No, maybe some talk is just semantics here, but the point is
I mean, there are.
You see, like, one concept, lattice refinement, so people who work actually on the lattice refinement model, they think that A is -1/2.
You talk about, but you talk for, this is for isotropic and homogeneous models. Okay.
Yeah. So I think you're talking about terminology.
That's what I mean by that, okay? In other words, I mean the factor which I put there. This is my terminology. This is the terminology in our work. It might not be what everybody else is using, but that's the... In other words, for me, is the power there. Is it going to be... Certainly. No, certainly. I see your point. I just say what we did. Okay, can I go to my last point? So the last point which we did is, as I said, this kind of numerical recipe in order to be able to solve the quantum constraint equation for any kind of large refinement model. And this is going to be useful when people want to to study like black hole interiors, when we are going to have two-dimensional wave function. And the problem which appears is that the information which one needs in order to go and calculate what will be the wave function of a given lattice point is not going to be found by previous iterations. And it has been a previous work, which by these authors here, where they have suggested a kind of interpolation scheme in order to approximate the necessary data points which we do not have. And what William and I did is we proposed another method which used Taylor expansion. And with this method, we can as well have a kind of well-defined and predictable accuracy of the way that we find these extra lattice points.
Just to understand the context. So now you are looking at A to be some fixed value, like A equal to 0.
And now I'm not... what do you mean by A?
So the parameter A that so far you have...
No. It's going to be a value. I mean, you can see in a minute what I mean by that. It's going to be specific. What we do depend on the values of that. Okay? But let me... Yeah, it's free. I don't fix it again. So I'm going probably back and forth. So we fix this value. Now we don't talk at all about what the value of A is. And what we say is that if, for example, here you are, becomes a general value A. So if we have one-dimensional systems, then one can easily see that the refined lattice can be mapped into a fixed lattice by just doing a change of your basis. For example, if you consider this kind of lattice refinement, mu naught is a constant, A I have not fixed what it is, by making a change of variables, going from mu to nu, that's what you are going to have, with again A to be a kind of variable that I have not fixed. So you can go and write down the full Hamiltonian constraint in a constant lattice, and you can see that has the same form with the Hamiltonian constraint on a varying lattice. Now, this game of changing the basis and being able to achieve that is not going to work if you have two dimensions. And now, in the case of a two-dimensional Hamiltonian constraint, then it is a difference equation of a varying lattice, and you can see that we have these two step sizes in mu and tau. This is the two-dimensional Hamiltonian constraint in the varying lattice, and these are the definition of this C plus, minus, and C naught. Okay, for example, you can see that if we had a fixed lattice, then we need to know what would be the wave function in this point here. And in order to calculate that, we need the information in these ones, and we have them from the previous iteration. If we go to a lattice refinement, then when we have to calculate what the wave function will be here, we need to know the wave function in these points, for example, which we do not have, just because these two step sizes are not constant anymore, but there are decreasing functions of mu and tau. So the method which then we suggest is that we can go and consider Taylor approximation. So we have the function in three coordinates, and we're going to find what will be in the fourth point by just taking this Taylor approximation with these definitions here, and where the differentials have been approximated by using these two points in these expressions which we have. So these are the three points we have here, and we want to calculate what would be this coordinate there. And what we have found is that actually you can stay in linear order. You don't need to go to higher orders, because the higher order correction that you will have will be always, if we talk for slowly varying wave functions, much smaller than about 10^-2%. So one. I keep the first order in this Taylor kind of expansion. Okay? So then we have used this kind of numerical method in order to confirm and see stability of the sorted interior, which has been studied by Martin and collaborators, who did the von Naumann stability analysis of this difference equation, which is again the difference equation which I wrote before that you discussed with Martin. So these authors, they have seen that with this choice of lattice refinement, they have found that their system is going to be unstable if mu become bigger than 2 tau. So let us try numerically to see with our method if we can confirm that. So what we do is we are going to put a kind of a small perturbation at this position, that position, or that position, and then we're going to see whether what these authors have said, Martin collaborators, that the stability is given for if tau is greater than mu half is going to be confirmed or not. And indeed, we found that only in this case we have oscillations. Otherwise, here we have that it exponentially grows. And, of course, we could use the same method as well for different kinds of lattice refinement models. For example, for this one, general A, we have found that the stability condition is going to range between mu smaller than 4 tau if we have a constant lattice and mu smaller than 1 over 0.6 tau if we have A equal to 2. And for all intermediate values, you can see here from this graph where we plotted mu over tau along this critical line where the system is going to become unstable. So you have to take actually this point, forget about this line that joins them, but you have to take these points that will tell you how the system is going to behave. And finally, again by these authors, it has been shown that with this choice of lattice refinement, then you have that the system is going to be always stable. We have confirmed that this is indeed the case, but once you have a small kind of preclassicality and it starts growing, then the system is going then to become unstable. So in other words, what I'm trying to tell you here is that we used this kind of method, which could be useful when somebody wants to study black hole interiors or Bianchi models. We have been using as well in order to confirm or extend a work which has been done in order to find stability of these black hole interiors. So I think I arrive in my conclusions. So what has been using at the beginning in loop quantum cosmology, the quantized holonomies were taken to be shift operators with a fixed magnitude. Like that, they obtain difference equations which they have a constant interval between the points on the lattice. This led to a number of problems in the semiclassical limit. That's why lattice refinement has been introduced. And I tried to convince you that lattice refinement, we saw that is useful so that we have a natural inflationary model. Then we found that for a given lattice refinement, only certain types of matter can be supported. And finally, we saw that unique factor ordering, if you demand unique factor ordering at the Wheeler-DeWitt kind of continuum limit, then only one type of lattice refinement model can be accepted. And finally, I gave you a numerical recipe which can solve the constraint equation for general kind of lattice refinement model, and then we used it in order to study the stability conditions of our system. Thank you. Yes.
I'm afraid that in this case there is one necessary assumption, namely that wave function or the given solution won't be changing significantly in the lattice. Okay, so I have to make a comment because we sort of test this solution in the case of the system. And in that case, we have.
Right.
And the problem is that between the selection sectors, each corresponding party to changing the lattice from original to some other points, the wave either wave function or eigenfunctions change significantly. So at this isotopic system, this assumption is not valid.
So what was the difference between the two? I mean, what was the spacing between this, where you took this wave function?
One
the spacing, because I mean here was for the, you know, I mean it was for these points given from the previous iteration, so everything respects this delta mu delta ta. In that sense, how was it with respect to the step size? If it was three times the step size, then it's no problem, but if it was one, then gives another one. Gives another. But for each, each. But then you have broken this preclassicality limit, don't you? Yeah, but he says that he has it. He has potential. Actually, even said that, yeah, that this decreasing function of mu and tau, the delta mu and the delta tau. When we... Here. Are decreasing functions of, they are not constants. Yeah. And then you find exactly. In the 1D case, you can do this game here. So you can map it into a discrete, and then you can do our approach and that approach and see whether they give the same result. So if they give the same result, it's a test that it is successful, I believe. And the one-dimensional Taylor expansion thing. This is a trick that you cannot play, though, in the two dimensions. So you cannot map it like that. I can show you. I didn't put it here. You can do that, and you can solve the equation and find, and then you can go and do the Taylor expansion, and then go and see whether, I mean, the two results. What you mean? So this is the question which we have to solve, where we already put a typical, where we have already taken into account the lattice refinement, because these values here, everything depends on what you say. So in order to solve that in the large limit, I want to specify what the matter Hamiltonian is. Okay? Now I'm going to parameterize the matter Hamiltonian, where this delta parameter is going to come into the game. And then I try to solve it, requesting some set of conditions for the solutions of this large limit equation, the large limit. So this is all. Here I have taken into account the lattice refinement. To solve it, I need to specify that. I parameterize in the large scales in terms of that delta, So I have a two-parameter space, and now I demand certain conditions for the solutions of this kind of Wheeler-DeWitt equation. What is not compatible with what? Sorry, Eddie.
Can you just have the scalar part of the address?
Yes. Here it is. This is the scalar product, which this is a way that we define the norm so that these operators, they become self-adjoint. I don't see what delta you mean. This delta, I mean, this is the delta which appears here. No, in the gravitation part there is no delta. This is the way that I parameterize the matter part. Yes.
So the matter Hamiltonian changes, but the gravitational Hamiltonian doesn't change.
Uh-huh.
But the gravitational Hamiltonian is also self-adjoint. So how can it be self-adjoint? If in fact you are changing the inner product delta,
you're
not changing the gravitational part of the Hamiltonian. That is the expression.
Sorry, are you?
Is the
base? Yes. Well, I mean, I think I should think about that because it's probably in the session of the discussion.
Yes.
Let me. So what you want? This one, you mean?
Yeah, so you get this description. Now, so here you looked at this value, this parameter A. I'm confused about this level of your practice refinement. What is being refined here? You're not taking continuous limit.
No, my the way whether mu naught is going to be a constant or not. So in other words, when I write the constraint equation and it has this step size, is it constant or not?
That's what
I call refinement here.
So now supposing the step size is constant, then you're saying that you get constant.
If the step size is constant, then I get I get that and I get that.
So it's ridiculously
tuned.
Right.
Corresponds to the fixed lattice. Minus 1/2 corresponds to that.
Supposing I just had A equal to minus 1/2.
Right.
But it seems to me that even then, epsilon has to be ridiculously small for you not to get cosmological problems.
Where is it? Yes. Here it is, yeah. Right. Here. All these values are out because they are not going, this preclassicality thing is not going to be valid. In other words, so. No, this is different. No, this doesn't come. This gives parameterize the A and delta so that I have the preclassicality to be valid and I have So it's not. However, you can immediately see what the values, if you pick up now one value of A, then you can see what the matter is going to be. Because remember that here, I mean, if we write the matter Hamiltonian, then we can see that as the Hamiltonian for an Eflaton field. So the value delta equal to zero would correspond to an Eflaton field.
So what's delta play into the equation of state?
Yeah, sure, it's almost
zero. It's very close to zero. Now, how the... yes, I don't know. I cannot give you the things. I can think of how it could be written, but we haven't written that in terms of the question of state. Certainly, it can be. Yeah, I agree. Right. Then if you have epsilon has to be very small, it would be very away from the minus 1/2. That's why I said that at the end that we can say that there are phenomenological reasons for which this A has to be minus 1/2. And then
but
we...
One might say that, well, it is, I mean, from observational tests and so on, usually give you a little window. You just coming from terminology. But what was constructed by the numbers that you put down,
yes,
that you have been just before, like what happens at A equal to 0 and what happens at A equal to minus 1/2.
Minus 1/2.
The difference
was very big. Actually,
that window is ridiculously small.
The ring is very small,
like,
yeah.
Much smaller than, for example,
right.
What happens in test of temporal
difficulty. Right, I agree with you. What we could very easily do is take as well another kind of inflationary model and see what it gives. Because that was a kind, again, of an illustration,
yeah,
to see. But I think that it will be the same direction. But you know, you might as well say that when inflation took place at the beginning, the universe was not homogeneous and isotropic, so then you might have deviations from these large refinements. It should be a kind of average between the different things. So, that's a different model, yeah. But I mean, when you find this result, one has to think under which kind of framework it was found. It was found under completely.
Thank you.